Welcome to the Journey into the Future. This is a exploration. No one of us here in this session or anyone you talk to has the one answer as to what the future is going to hold. We are creating it and we are co-creating it together, which is why I love bringing people together with these different backgrounds, different perspectives, to be able to share and get points of view. This is a interactive, it is not your average webinar. This is an opportunity for each of us to share openly and to give perspectives, to give questions. There's no one right answer as I go backwards here. We are on a moonshot though, a moonshot into this new future. Joined today by Ingvar Uglund, who is a dreamer, a creator, including the creation of the new tech lab at DNB, which is Norway's largest bank. He is also a very open-minded thinker, and as you can see, has some ideas and perspectives outside of tie, suit, and being a banker, as we say. So we'll hear lots of good things from Ingvar today, including an exciting announcement before we leave the journey. I do appreciate all feedback. There is in the chat a link to the survey after the session. We'd love your feedback. And please do note the dates for the upcoming journeys and make sure to join us along the way. Oops. The world we're living in is a very interesting place. As we were just saying, the temperatures today are record high here. Environment change, geopolitical change, and technology change is almost like a cyclone. And for me, I used to wake up and lay in bed kind of thinking through, what am I going to do today? What are my meetings about? Where am I going to be? Who am I going to meet with? And looking at my agenda. I don't know about you all, but today, when I wake up, the first thing I do is look at the front page of, for me, it's the New York Times, just to see, is the world still there? Because things happen so quickly that just recognizing, yep, the world is still there, no one has totally destroyed or blown anything up, is for me a relief that we can now focus on what's important. When these announcements come, whether it's politically or technologically, I think a lot of people tend to react. And that's what I heard just a few weeks ago when DeepSeek was first announced. Oh my God, the Chinese are coming after us. They're going to take us over. It's this big bad wolf. I mean, in reality, whether it's DeepSeek or whether it's other tools, I fundamentally believe that technology, especially AI, is simply a tool. It's a tool created by people, just like a kitchen knife is a tool, something that is there to make our lives easier. Can it hurt? Can it damage? Can it kill and maim? Yes, AI can. Just like a kitchen knife can. If you put it in the wrong hands of people with negative intent, it can create issues. But that's a small percentage compared to putting it in the hands of people that can create good things. And I believe a part of our responsibility as people is to look for those good things that AI and other technologies can help us to create. Because the more we put out to the universe the positive intent of, oh my God, this is good, the better it's actually going to be. So it's shifting your mind. When you see something that's happening, when something new comes, a change happens in your company, avoid the human tendency to go into crisis mode. Oh my God, the world is coming to an end. They're coming after us. Instead, take that step back and reflect and think about what does this really mean for me? Maybe there is positive. Maybe I could use this new tool in a different way. Maybe it could help me do the things that I really hate doing and would free me to do the things that I find are really important. So one of the things I encourage all of my clients we work with in the EGA community is to learn to take a step back and reflect. Reflect on what does this mean? What was that person's intent? How might this serve my purpose instead of hurting it? And on that reflection, then move forward as opposed to the gut reaction. We live in an interesting world. And yes, there are times we all want to hide away. But there's so much positive, I believe, that will come out of this storm of change that we're in. And that's the reason we're here today, is to explore where people's thoughts, questions, ideas are around what's happening in our worlds as we prepare to, in a few minutes, after a few questions, turn over to Ingvar to share perspectives of how AI is utilized in big organizations like DNB, where it's come from, where it's going, and how it can help you get to that moonshot, if you will, into the future. So I would love to hear any questions. I would love to engage in any debate on what I've said so far before we jump into new ideas. And great to see, Peter, that Norway and Malta are coming together weather-wise. Interesting to hear the perspective of DeepSeek is the most American company imaginable. I don't know if that was you, Philip, but I'm curious of what you mean by that.
First of all, they're a hedge fund. They funded the whole operation on other people's money out of the hedge fund. They had 200 engineers working on the whole thing. It's all running on NVIDIA chips, including ones which they managed to smuggle out of Singapore. And of course, their open system. You've got a situation where OpenAI was intended to be open source, but of course their backers wouldn't let them because they were going to say, if you put so much money in, then we need protection. OpenAI is operating in a puddle of its own, and the Chinese are operating open source. And now what's happening is that pretty well everything which is coming out of China is DeepSeek inside. So that's why when DeepSeek came out with R1, within 2 weeks, everybody in China had launched something which was bigger and better than DeepSeek. Actually, it was DeepSeek with a wrapper. So Huawei's offering, Alibaba's offering, Kimi, what's the other one? GUI. They're all DeepSeek.
Interesting. Interesting. It's great,
So, look,
great perspective.
DeepSeek had managed to use everybody else's engineers. So it's other people's money, other people's time to achieve this.
Use or leverage, build on top of. Interesting. Any other questions from a few initial thoughts before we give Ingvar the heads up to share screen and jump in with a few extra minutes here?
Yeah, I have a question. No, I find it really overwhelming hearing about AI day and night and cause of companies and new applications, new software developments. What do we do at the board level? How do we develop the organization? So my question is, how do we cope with something I call FOBO, fear of becoming obsolete, FOBO? I'm really seeing this happening with me personally and with few people. Many people are not realizing yet the impact, but how can we deal with this huge wave hitting us without making, and how do we deal also with our children's education?
Personally, I think it's a couple of different things that go into that. One is I always recommend for companies that are focused on AI that they leave that aside, put the AI in the closet. Now think about what can we as a company do to grow our market share, our reputation, our revenue, whatever you're trying to do as a company. And think about what are the problems and the obstacles we have in getting to where we want to be. And once you figure that out, then you can go back and pull the AI out of the closet to say, where might a little of this help the people achieve the results? So shift it from AI focused to business focused, this being one of a plenty of tools, including different people, different skills, different mindset. The other thing is to really help people to understand the importance of humanity. The more we use of tech, the more important human empathy, trust, care, thinking the context becomes. And so many companies I find are putting more education in how to use AI than in how to be a good human being. That's just my perspective. Matt, thoughts?
Yeah, you basically said what I was going to say.
Oh, okay.
More eloquently, maybe. No, I think people need to embrace new stuff. And I'm pretty sure when the computer came along, it's going to take everybody's job. Then the next technology, it's going to take everybody's job. But you're right, people need to think about what can I do as a human that AI can't do, and then excel at that.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And I completely agree with Shetel, who here in the chat says make sure that we're basically, I'll flip that around to say make sure you're looking at the positive intent of each person. Absolutely.
So
And
Jennifer,
yeah.
I think there was a presentation, I think it was the last time, that almost directly answered this question. And I don't know if you could send that out again and to this particular group, because there's some people in this group that weren't here last time. And it would be incredibly useful to, if you have a link, or to send that presentation out, because it addressed that overwhelmingness. And help me, what was the gentleman's name that made that presentation?
So our last featured thought leader was Jens Andreas Husby, and I just put, oops, I put it to the one person. I will put in the chat to everyone the
Okay.
link to where all of the recordings of all nine previous, this is our 10th trek on the journey. So all of the previous treks are recorded and available at that location that's there in the chat, Journey into the Future at the JenniferVessels.com site.
So I have two more
Excellent.
comments.
Yep. And then we'll turn over to Ingvar.
One's directed to you. I'm sorry, I was wrong. I told you it would be 6 months or less. I didn't emphasize the last, where AI could take on human empathy and all of that. It's happened.
Okay.
Some lady admitted to NPR that she fell in love with her chatbot. And the whole idea was not possible. But the chatbot started learning based on the interactions, because she used the chatbot. So it learned to develop the human empathetic skills that it needed to make this person feel more comfortable. And across time, she didn't realize it, but she fell in love with the machine. But since
Interesting.
then, lots of other things have come up about how AI, because we don't know exactly everything how it works, is now, because they're interacting with humans so much, they're gathering that data, and that's coming back as more empathetic skills. I don't, obviously, it's not origination, but it is by osmosis, I guess you'd have to say.
Yeah.
Are we not biological AI?
He may be evolving to that, though. So back to Salim, you'll look at the presentation, identify what are the problems that are in your organization. And Matthew said, those problems that you identify that you'd like to attack across time, where does the machine do way better than humans, so that you help humans segregate, this is something I don't need to do. The machine does this way better than I could ever do it. And however, here's my skill set that I can add to that that really augments my personal capability to contribute to a bottom line or a mission or a project. So that's a short little succinct thing of what I've learned over the last, I don't know, 6 months with Jennifer's organization. I could not have said that 6 months ago, Salim.
Happy to have helped. Ingvar, why don't you share screen and jump on in with your perspectives of where this has come from and going?
Yep.
Green button at the bottom.
Yes. All right. Can you see it?
Yes.
Okay. So just a little bit about me. I come from a background of mathematics, and when I was studying mathematics in the 90s, AI was something only a few very geeky mathematicians were doing, and none of the electricians, as we like to call it, the computer science guys, were dealing with AI. And now finally I can explain to my mother what I was studying at NTNU back in the days. From there on, sorry, I was with Microsoft for a while, and after that I did a few startups and scale-ups. Someone went really well, and someone went all the way to chapter 11, learned the most from the failures, of course. And I've been with DNB for the last 7+ years, building up this unit called New Tech Lab. And being a building in, up and being a moonshot unit in an old and established company is not just straightforward. But I'll share some of my thoughts and learnings from how we do that and why it's important. And DNB is, as I mentioned, more than 200 years old, and some of our IT systems are even older. That's a joke, but if it's funny, it's because it's almost true. I think when dealing with moonshots and trying to look into the future, we've always known that there is uncertainty. And I think we've never known as much as we know today about how little we know about tomorrow. And that has always been true. But I think now it's becoming more obvious to more people because of all the change that we see at large scale, where it's available to so many people. And it doesn't only apply to technology, but it also applies to the changes and like the unpredictable changes in circumstances and in surroundings and in our conditions. And so our approach to this is that when you don't know what the future brings, the best you can do is to build a portfolio of options for what the future can become. And that's what we're doing here at New Tech Lab. And this is my team here on the screen. This is not AI generated. This is Camilla, the little fox. She's a visual artist. This guy, he's a musician. This is Karate Kid. But Camilla, she's a painter, and this is how she sees us. So it's just an example of, in order to do like radical innovation, I think it's important that we do some, that we put together a radically diverse team, and this is what this picture shows. So we go to work every day and to try to answer that big question that we get in our face every day on the screen here: WTF, what's the future? And we've been doing that for quite some while, and have this framework that I'll share my thoughts share with you and how it applies in particular with AI. I have recently made some changes to my job description. Been an executive vice president at DNB for quite some time now. I've changed into a more free role where I'm also doing an industry PhD in artificial intelligence, and trust with NTNU in Trondheim and Cornell in the US. Just a little bit of background. This is my bragging slide. I was named the Artificial Professional of the Year 2024 for the Nordics. That's not the bragging. The bragging is about the jacket because I know it's so cool. We've been primarily here in Oslo. We've had people in London for about the last 5 years and in San Francisco, Silicon Valley since 2018. And I want to take you on a little bit of a Norwegian cultural history here. This is, everyone in Norway knows what this is. This is Il Tempo Gigante. It's a fantasy car drawn by Norwegian visual artist Kjell Aukrust prior to the movie from 1975, which I think is the top grossing Norwegian movie of all times. And it's a really wild design for a car. It has so many ridiculous, crazy features. Among others, it has two engines and a radar. And looking at it, that seems to be the most ridiculous and logical design of a car ever. But fast forward 40 years and Tesla Model S has two engines and a radar. It just takes a very different shape and form. And that's a good example of moonshot thinking, because you can imagine something, and then once it materializes, it very often takes a very different shape and form. But the reason why I'm using this, and this is from an upcoming book that I'm coming with, these illustrations, there's the book, it's in print, Norwegian only for the time being. But it has, I use it as a metaphor, because this, again, this design of the car is a little bit different, but it has two speedometers. It has one that goes from 0 to 250 kilometers per hour, and then another one that goes from 250 and upwards. And moonshot thinking, that is that second speedometer. But the thing here is that you're going to need both. You can't just do one of them. And the first speedometer, when it comes to innovation or application of technology, that's about using, and with AI in particular, using AI to improve your operations, improve quality, improve customer satisfaction, and add AI-enabled features to what you already have. All of that is great for business. It's easy to talk about to your CFO. So that is necessary, but it's not sufficient, because you can make a good living out of speedometer one today and halfway into tomorrow, metaphorically. But the day after tomorrow, something else comes and renders your current business model, your current products obsolete. And I think that far future has never been as near in time as it is today, because time, so to speak, is moving faster. And when it comes to AI in particular, it's very easy to automatically run into speedometer one mode. And if that would be speedometer two moonshots, think of it as it was never racing faster and faster horses that gave us the locomotive. It was new technology, the steam engine, and entirely new, driven forward, developed by totally different people than the horse breeders. If you've given the horse breeders to the steam engine to the horse breeders, they probably had used it to just heat up the stable. And I don't know if the horses would have been any faster by that. But the locomotive is, in retrospect, yes, it's obvious, but it was ridiculous in prospect because it didn't make sense. It was dependent on rails. And that's why it's so easy to just take whatever you have and apply new technology to it and limit yourself to speedometer one thinking. Here's another example from my book. This is a thing that was actually tried, a steam-driven car. And my favorite of all is this one. And this is what we see with AI so much today. This is a steam-driven horse, because you actually had we had horses that was working, and then we got new technology and just applied that, cramming this fantastic thing that could enable a totally different future, and cramming it into an old paradigm, the horse. And that's what I think we're seeing too much of today. The focus is too much on how can we use AI to automate what we're already doing today. And that is a little bit of putting basically doing what we already been doing, just faster. And many of these things are modeled from, these processes are modeled based on how we human beings would do it. And there's a lot of opportunity by thinking differently to that. But the problem in this speedometer too, that you would also need if you want to really get to the moon, is that there's radical uncertainty in this space. And Because when you can't ask your customers what they want, because they would answer faster horses, then the only thing you can do is experimentation. And that means you need to make some of these, there's a few things you need to acknowledge to live comfortably in speedometer 2 mode. And that is that change is obviously inevitable, but it's also change is good. And the biggest changes have not yet happened. And that means that there's a tremendous opportunity space. And in speedometer 2, you have to think about what can be done now that was not just impossible before, but it was even hard to imagine without getting deep into these type of technologies. And there's a good illustration why speedometer 1 is, or speedometer 2 is also necessary. And also, so speedometer 1 is necessary, but it's not sufficient. Speedometer 2 is also necessary, but that by itself is not sufficient. You need both in order to survive as an established legacy organization. This is different for startups if you have long funding. But I think this quote from Hemingway is good. That illustrates why speedometer 2 is also important. How did you go bankrupt, Bill asked. In two ways, Mike said, gradually and then suddenly. And this is because if you apply your AI to speedometer 1, you're just doing what you're already always have been doing, just better and better. You're not going to go, that's what's going to happen. It's going to go gradually bankrupt and then all of a sudden, suddenly bankrupt. And I think this is just an example to back that up. This is the average lifetime on S&P 500. It's just basically showing how the lifespan of these companies is increasing and is decreasing, and it is likely to continue to go down. So this means that in order to like mentally prepare for it, there's something about acknowledging that there's a lot of things we don't know, building this portfolio of options, and being prepared for changes that you didn't see coming. And that's like a paradox. So remember when we talked prior to this session, Jennifer said that I practice not being surprised by being surprised. And I think I want to use an example from, let's use DeepSeek as an example, because and the large language models, because here's just an illustration that I had on the whiteboard here. Back in, was it 2018, the attention paper? Can't remember. So some technologies came out of that, and GPT-1, it worked. It was pretty bad. Then GPT-2 came out, 2019 something, and it could barely count reliably to 10. And this, okay, this is going to take a long time. And then there is this, you have two data points, and it makes sense that you just extrapolate and think that, okay, GPT-3 might be better, but this is going to take a long time. And then all of a sudden, something happened, and that was GPT-3 came along. And from GPT-2 could barely count reliably to 10, GPT-3 could explain jokes. And at the time, they had no idea why, because it was never built for that. And then all of a sudden, what's happening? Because it's not linear anymore. And then it turns out that, oh, it never was. This was just the beginning of an exponential graph that we didn't see. And then when the performance is increasing exponentially over time, then it makes sense to pour exponentially more money into it, because scaling law says that you will get reward for that in the performance. And then if you then map this in a logarithmic scale, then it seems to be, then you can map it, then it becomes a straight line again. And then all of a sudden something happens. And this thinking here is like linearizing exponentiality. It means that we basically said that, oh, now we're back to a linear development. And then why are we doing that? Because it provides our human brains with some predictability and stability. And then again, we were shocked by the performance of GPT-3, democratized by ChatGPT a few months later. And then all of a sudden, DeepSeek comes. And it turns out that, oh, wow, price performance is totally different. And again, this is when the market gets shocked by this, is because we have, again, linearized the exponential development and think that everything will continue to be like that. And this is just an example of what happens if you don't expect almost like paradigm shifts to happen. And in there were no fundamental breakthroughs in the science as such here. They're all based on the same paper. It's just a clever technology implementation. And when this happens, the markets were shocked. It shouldn't be, but it did this linearization of the exponential development. And then who knows what's going to happen next time? I'm sure something will happen. Not sure if DeepSeek will continue along a line that is performing better than the original GPT. But I'm sure that something else will come up that will shock us again unless we prepare for this. And then this gives some of it shows some of the opportunity space driven by this exponential change that should motivate us to think in speedometer 2 mode, which says there are things now that there are new things that is possible now, and the future is there. We just haven't discovered it yet. It's going to be fundamentally different from what we're doing today. If you have that, and if you're doing that in a clever way and being consistent on trying out new things, having a portfolio of options for how AI can shape your future, the fear of being obsolete, as someone said, I like the term, that your speedometer 1 and 2 is basically your vaccine against that fear of being obsolete, because you need to do both, because speedometer 1 is going to be, that's going to be made obsolete over time. And that's why you need to do these moonshot things as well. I asked GPT-4 to make sense of that drawing, and this is what it came up with. It's pretty bad. It's a pretty messy drawing where I'm just thinking and drawing things on the whiteboard. And I just took a picture of it and asked GPT-4 to come up with does it make any sense? And this is what it was drawing, and yeah, made a good analysis of what I was trying to say. Not exactly, but hopefully you guys understood it better than GPT-4. So there are many examples of what the options for we're exploring for what the future of banking might become in order to reach for the moon. The reason why I've taken a different path and stepping down from the leadership role and focusing on the science part is because I think in Norway, in this part of the world, we live in these high trust societies. We have high trust institutions. Trust and high trust societies is very fragile. But I think that is one of the superpowers that we have that might be the hardest thing to duplicate from either from China or from Silicon Valley. So that's why my research is on AI and trust and trying to find some scientific evidence on how we can make almost human level trust in AI. And that is what I'm spending my time on. That was my last slide, and I'll happy to, yeah, there's a QR code if you want to follow me on LinkedIn.
I have one small question on the trust in AI. Do you mean that your research is around how humans can trust AI, or how AI can generate trust, or how, yeah.
Yeah, that's two different angles to the same problem. And I think one is easier. I don't think any of this is easy, but when AI is developing so fast, it's very hard. If you get out the paper today, if you're really fast, it'll take you 3 months to get it reviewed and get it out. That means it's based on totally outdated technology. How to build AI that can be trusted, that's a moving target. But what I would like to see, the other part of that is the stable part is what is it that we as human beings that makes us trust someone or something? And how can we do that with AI?
Fair enough. Great. Thank you. Thank you. So we'll let you unscreen share and have Matthew jump in. A belated happy St. Patrick's Day, Matthew.
To be honest, it's more St. Patrick's Day for people outside of Ireland. They seem to get a bigger kick out of it than we do. And God, they love it in America. It takes Trump's focus off tariffing the crap out of us. I've been putting some jokes into Mr. CGPT here, and I put in one, dentist, open up for me, please. Patient, sometimes I feel sad. And it was explaining the joke back to me. Obviously, that went over way over everybody's head about the different meanings and the different nuances. But it says it actually admitted that it didn't understand sarcasm, or it can be tricky.
Very well said. We're still teaching it. You're probably giving it good feedback just in saying that. Philip, you had a point. Unmute.
Yeah, I've just unmuted. Okay. Something which I've come to the conclusion pretty recently talking with the people who we are going to be using for developing our AI, is that if you're going to use AI, you need to have, as the human side of it, the most deep thought and understanding of what your business is. That you really do need to be able to go back to absolute first principles and think through, almost start imagining all over again what is possible and what would be ideal, and throw away all parameters which we have hitherto operated within. So I'm finding that AI is challenging me to be far more original, far more basic in my thoughts. And also, whereas in conventional IT for many years, you know, you didn't do bespoke development because there's always an off the shelf, which is 70, 80, 90% giving you what you need, and is so much quicker to get to actually implement and cheaper to develop than doing a bespoke. AI is still in its absolute infancy. And I've come to the conclusion that ready-made apps and agents and everything just don't hack it. That what is out there in the market right now is not good enough. And it's all sitting in its own little puddles. And so the way to use AI, if you're really going to be getting the best advantage of it for now, is that you are going to have to use bespoke development, open source, and put yourself in a position where you really communicate with your developers and you're able to talk to your developers along the lines of, look, this is what we want to do now, but over the horizon, this is what we want to do. And frankly, that over the horizon, AI can potentially help you and stimulate you. But I think the human side of it is becoming far, the demands on the human side are far greater with AI than they've ever been.
Yeah, completely agree. Just in simple things of how do you put a prompt in, you've got to be very specific or you get a lot of crap back. So Mason, it's great to see your hand go up. Would love to see your perspective.
Thank you, Jennifer. So many thought-provoking comments here. I'm not sure where to begin, but let me make one comment and then pose a question. So the comment is, I think we're all talking about this, you know, avalanche of innovation, you know, within the space of AI and what do we do? And my humble perspective is we have to do what we've always done, which is learn and adapt, except that we need to do that at a much faster rate than we've ever had to. Right? And I think that's the challenge for me personally, right, is that, okay, how do I learn faster? Because the rate of innovation and advances happening is faster than I can digest in a given day. And how do you keep up? So I'm finding myself constantly asking people, how do you keep up? What are you reading? What are you watching? How do you do that? Because it's there. The second thing, and I'm going back to Ingvar's, I hope I pronounced that correctly, presentation. I thought it was quite intriguing. And I was reminded when you went through those, the steam engine and the car with the steam engine car and then the mechanical horse. And the thought that it provoked for me is that this is very typical of the standard technology S-curves. So as the new technologies come out, and you can make an argument that what AI is doing today is making us a lot more efficient. It's all about efficiency. It's doing it faster, better, etc. But we're solving the same underlying problem, which is where that mechanical steam engine horse buggy visual that you had. The underlying problems are not evolving as fast as the solutions that we're able to bring to bear. So we're now in this initial stage with AI, at least, of figuring out what existing problems we can solve better, faster, cheaper using AI. When does that inflection point come? When the innovation then opens up for you the universe of discovering new problems to be able to attack with?
It's a great question. We need the exponential curve on that one. Any answers to this great question, you could jump in or put in the chat. And as you ponder, we can also turn over to Boris that may not have the ultimate answer.
Can I make a short comment?
Yeah, please.
So I think you're absolutely right. And we're lagging behind how much we're utilizing the progress of technology, because as you say, we're solving the same underlying problem. And this is very typical. I'm not an expert on this, but I think we're seeking towards some kind of stability. And if we can just find a much better solution to existing problem, we feel we're done. And because it seems like our human brain is looking for that stable thing. And it's probably because when we were living on the savannah, stability was needed to survive. And now it's basically the opposite. We need to adapt more faster than ever in order to survive in the long run. And there's something called the end of history syndrome. And it's the idea that we look at, for example, through the lifespan of a human being, change is happening very fast in the beginning, from your 1 year to your 2 years. It's a lot of change, but from your 68 to 69, it's hardly any difference. But it seems like in on average, there's a point in time where things go from really fast change to hardly any change at all. And that point in time seems to be, for anyone at all times, just now. So now all change has happened. But reality is really, that seems to be how, this is how the psychologist explains how the human brain works. But the opposite is actually what we need to train our brain for. Because as I said, the biggest changes have not yet happened. And that means that the opportunity space is big, much bigger than what we've seen of change so far. And if you look back 100 years, so much have changed. But 100 years from now, I think we'll see, I don't know, give it 20 years, and then we'll look back, and you'll see that those last 20 years was significantly more change and developments, and hopefully for the positive. I'm an optimist. But it's I think the main muscle we need to train to take advantage of that is imagination. And I think because these large language models are basically stochastic models, there is some uncertainty to it. We like to say that they hallucinate, but I don't like that, because it's by design. They were never made to be knowledge models. They are language models by design, and as long as they are stochastic, there is this uncertainty. The good thing about that is that they're really good at creativity. So my best friend, in my personal trainer, when I exercise my imagination, is a large language model, because there's no limit to what it can come up with of crazy ideas. And that helps challenge my brain. So I use that kind of that what many will call a defect of a large language model, the hallucination. I use that as its superpower, because it means that it's not in any way grounded in reality. And that helps me on my imagination.
Interesting. Consistent with last session, we heard about using ChatGPT to point out your blind spots, find the problems, see the things we wouldn't otherwise see. Boris, you've had your hand up patiently. Unmute.
If I can unmute as well. I really liked your use of the second speedometer thing. My experience when you are working, pushing the envelope and the boundaries, It requires quite a lot from management and the leadership in a company to follow the second speedometer. And this is increasing even faster in the AI, with AI. How do you see this with your experience and especially within DNB when you are pushing the boundaries? Because most of the organization is still on the first speedometer.
That's a really good question, and it's something we've been, homeowners, we struggle for a while to get that right. Because in order to do speedometer two, there's so much uncertainty. There's so many things you don't know. There's so many things you don't know that you don't know. And you can't measure progress in the speedometer one type of metrics. So basically, in my book, the preface is written by a previous CEO of DNB, Rune Bjerke, and it started with he saying that clearly what we've done in the few in the past is not what's gonna make us great in the in the future. But we don't know everything about what that is. But we need someone to sit down and investigate that opportunity space and come up with something that can guide us. And that's like you need that like top level buy-in and sponsorship. And because it's so hard to measure in traditional ways, and it's because it's so easy to overmeasure, it's basically a trust thing. And you need so the way we're set up is that we're very small. So we're basically like I often compare it to a Silicon Valley startup where we have DNB invests in our team, not in any particular idea or product, because we know that will change, but in the team. So we have small runway, but we have a long runway. So we have scarce, secure funding. And we need long runway because things take very long time. And then need to make sure that whatever we do, whatever we come with insights or learnings, we need to make sure that benefits the rest of the organization. Because otherwise, it'll be, oh, these guys, they have a blessing from the top. They can do whatever they want. And that's not going to work. So there are some examples where we came up with some, with the one example, I'll share that briefly. Back in 2019, we were playing with the idea about, if since everyone is now using mobile phones for everything in banking, we used to be branch offices, then was internet bank, browser based, now it's mobile. And the end of history syndrome was taking over DNB. Now we're with mobile, it's going to be that forever. So we were playing around with the idea, what if there are no phones in the future? From 1985 to now, there are practically no branch offices anymore, practically. So what if there are no phones in the future? And that sounds radical because we're so addicted to our phones. So we did an experiment, but how in our world, what could we do to test that, get some kind of validation of maybe some weak signals from the future? And we built a solution for pay with your face, no phones, but just basically what we see now when we board a plane. We ran it for 6 months at a coffee shop at Grünerløkka here in Oslo. Technology worked. There were some regulatory changes, an adoption, biggest failure ever. It was so premature, or maybe we'll never fly at all. It's the most embarrassing failure I've ever been part of, and I'm so proud of it because we learned so much. And then a couple of years later, we had COVID, we had totally lockdown, everything could all of a sudden be done. And then that was like the final death to branch offices. And then it turns out that in order to make sure we keep our digital infrastructure in Norway safe and secure, it's built on bank ID, government and private sector high trust authentication. In order to make sure that that is trustworthy, you need to have identification on file. And what people used to do was take their passport and go to a bank office and show the bank office. They took a photocopy of that, and a human was verifying this is the person that we'll see on the paper. That's how it was built. That's not super safe and secure, but it's the best we had. All of a sudden, no branch offices, and a lot of people's bank ID were expiring. And that means you can't do anything in Norway. Literally, you can't do anything. That was a huge problem. And we figured out that, okay, we might have a tool for that. We have some experience with facial recognition that we've tried over many years. We took the same technology, applied some liveliness detection, making sure that whatever you're taking a photo of is skin and not paper, so you can't just show a photo of yourself. And then that was built into the Bank ID app, which if you're in Norway, you use that to scan your, retrieve a high-resolution photo from the chip in on the passport, use your phone to do liveness detection and facial recognition, and all of a sudden that is automatically uploaded into the core systems of the bank. That would not have been done if it wasn't for the huge and embarrassing failure of Pay with Your Face back in 2019. So that's an example of the moonshot things, a portfolio of options what the future might become, repurpose it for something else.
Just
So
because it
thank you.
doesn't work to solve today's problem doesn't mean it won't solve something else. Schüttel, and then I'll do a quick thank you for those that need to dive off at the top of the hour, but let's have Schüttel come in with his question, then we'll come back to Matthew.
Yeah, thank you. I couldn't put away the issue with AI and trust, as I've been working with trust frameworks a lot the last couple of years. But the question to Ingvar, or all of you actually, what do you think will be the impact on society when we teach AIs to deal with trust and trustworthiness? Because that will force us to make some societal changes on how we actually perceive truth ourselves.
Can you elaborate on that? What kind of changes it will?
When we are talking to each other, we are, or if I ask you about something, I do a calculation about how trustworthy your response to my question is, and it's possible to model that in for computers. And if AIs become good at doing that calculation, it will mean that we as humans will be caught if we lie. And that will have some really big impact. I think that will have some really big impact on our society because we will be caught lying by the AI all the time.
Great point. Any thoughts on that, Ingvar?
I'm sure AI will be able to do that, but unless we see something significant change in the large language models, because they are stochastic in its nature, I don't think they. I think that the path we're on there is not the way to. That's not necessarily the path forward to that level of ultimate truthfulness that you're almost saying. I don't even think it's the way to AGI. Because you saw the exponential price development. Remember that AGI, the only AGI, or the only GI, the only general intelligence we have now is this, and it runs on 20 watts. And the LLMs, we're on a path to see how much energy can we save, can we use? And I think we need to go in the other direction in order to achieve general intelligence of the level that can run, that we have, that can run on 10 watts. Anyhow, but it's a really good question, and I don't think it's fundamentally different from all other types of tools we've had before. It's just that we will say that this time it's different. Yes, and it was different the last time also, and the time before. It's just that this time it's different in how it's different, and that also applied previously. These are good questions that we once there's a paradigm shift, like how. How do we do this now that we have such great tools? But is it, and I don't know the answer to this, but I think I'll just shoot it back to you. But isn't it, in a way, the same question we could have asked in all these paradigm shifts when we had computers doing things better than we do?
Maybe. I think the big challenge is that it's so easy to generate a lot of lies or non-truths. So we have to ensure that the AI are trustworthy. And by doing that, we will be challenged on how we perceive trustworthiness ourselves.
And that, in my
So,
opinion, is where the human, our 20 whatevers that we as humans have, but also our intuition. And that's where I still fundamentally believe that in the foreseeable future, I won't say my lifetime anymore, but the foreseeable future, humans will always have something that an AI cannot have. And some of that, I believe, is the intuition, the spirituality, the soul feeling of things that I don't expect to be into an AI. And we have the offer.
it's a pretty good neural network running on 10 watts.
So Jennifer, you posted in the chat area a notion of quantum thinking for us. So my question to you is, what is that process to go from analog thinking to quantum thinking? And then Ingvar, he answered the question. He does this regular in his brain thinking, but he pushes himself and uses the tool to try to get to some other point that his brain's not at. Oh my God, that is the key from my perspective. What I'm taking away from this one is, yeah, that's the way to get started. That's the way to move my brain
Important.
into that direction so that now I can tie my brain into all the other brains in the world that are thinking. Thank you,
Well
Ingvar.
said. Well said, Kurt. That is humans and AI working effectively together.